Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. I know I say that every week, but I genuinely hope it's been okay. I'm not sure how many of you even listened to the intro, so if you do, hello, thank you, because I do take time to record it. So it's nice to know that somebody listens. Perhaps nobody listens to the intro, apart from me and Kate, my editor. Anyway, hi Kate. We have a Griefcast Live coming up on June the 6th at the Udderbelly Festival on the South Bank in London. If you head to the Udderbelly website, you should be able to buy tickets, and I will try and tweet links as well. You can follow us on Twitter at The Griefcast. We're also on Instagram at The Griefcast as well. And if you are on any of those networks, I recommend following us, because I'm always tweeting and Instagramming other stuff from other people about grief or articles they've read. So it's quite a helpful place if you're looking for other resources. This week I'm talking to musician and writer Felix White. You may know Felix's name already because he was in the hugely successful band The Maccabees. They had 4 albums, they got Mercury nominated, and yeah, they were fairly massive, it's fair to say. The Maccabees have since finished and he is now a writer. Felix came in to talk to me about his mum, who died when he was 17. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with musician and writer Felix White. Hello.
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 Right.
We were just talking about musician. But you are a writer these days as well.
I am a writer, yeah.
Yeah. Are you finding that transition hard? That's what we were just
talking about. Into writing?
Yeah, of like being able to say you're a writer.
I am finding it, well, that's an interesting question, because I was in my band for a long time, so about 15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got very used to being
a musician.
You know, that's it's Felix from the Maccabees,
yeah.
And I go, oh, I'm in the band.
Yeah.
And everyone looks at you like, oh, we know who this guy is.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you command a certain attention.
Yeah.
And it is interesting when someone introduces you as a cricket writer, you don't get the same currency in the room.
That's the problem, yeah.
So I always feel like it's still a shifting thing where someone goes, oh, you know, it's him from the band, and someone goes, oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, because it's funny, because like the fans of cricket writing are very different.
Yeah, I mean, that's so cool. I mean, that's fucking cool to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But
my husband loves cricket, and I know that cricket element. It's a very different, like, yeah, it's like, oh, wow, hello, rather than like, oh, cool. Like,
yeah,
the age difference.
It's a much more niche market. Let's put it that way.
Niche, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I have, yeah, when the band split up, I chased down a lot of things and I kind of do all of them now.
Yeah, yeah.
So on a daily basis, it sort of changes.
Interesting, because we were just saying, like, I have all the actor, comedian, podcaster, improviser, writer. But
is that all of them?
I think that's all of them. Yeah. Mother, human, lover, less these days. And I think the problem is, for me, that's okay because I never was one of those things. I've always been all of them.
Right.
So, like, when I started acting, acting didn't work very well, so I became a comedian. And then comedian, I was also being an because, like, I was trying to get anything going.
Sure.
So I've always done loads because it's like, fuck, spin as many places as you can, guys. One of them will work.
Right.
So because you've been a musician, a successful musician, I guess that transition's a bit trickier because like you were musician, that's it for 15 years. Whereas I've always been, what am I doing today?
Things.
You know, what's gonna, and then I was a temp for like 10 years trying to get, working receptions while doing all the comedy. So,
right.
So yeah, I'm so used to not being defined by one thing.
Mm.
And also I think that you were very successful.
maybe that's like, I mean, I can say a neat way to describe transition is when my band broke up, I did actually write a massive piece because I've always loved cricket. The first thing I thought of was cricketers, what happens when they retire? And I'd met certain cricketers who were sort of re-evaluating who they were because your body just gives up.
Of course,
and you have to work out who you are again. So I did this kind of piece in conversation with a lot of cricketers that became shoemakers or firemen or whatever.
Yeah.
And they'd done so much... and I was kind of going through my own sense of catharsis through it.
Yeah.
And they were, most of them said, you know what? I feel better. I'm not just a cricketer.
Yeah, more.
I'm like a three-dimensional person. Yeah. I actually feel better about that now.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was one nice thing.
Yeah, because I guess they can't all join Test Match Special. Like, that's...
Well, only three or four of them can, unfortunately.
Because in my head, they all go there. But you've just made me realise, oh, no, they can't all do that, can
they? Secret handshake through the door.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome.
Yeah, to heaven.
Yeah.
No, that's not the way, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's... Well, I'm glad they're okay. That's good.
They're very okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, most of them are relieved.
Yeah, I mean, cricket. Yeah. I mean, it does look like running up and down, but I've been told it's actually quite physically demanding.
Mm.
I'm so... My husband's such a cricket fan, and I honestly, I've had it explained to me so
cricket.
Many times. So
maybe we shouldn't go down that
vortex. Yeah, I feel bad. Yeah, oh, because you're a big fan.
Oh, yeah.
Big.
And I do a podcast with Greg James, the Radio 1 DJ, and Jimmy Anderson, who bowls for England.
I know that name.
And he's the greatest fast bowler ever.
Yeah.
But our podcast has turned into a very loosely cricket-based sort of safe space for people that want to learn about the game.
Oh, nice.
So
I should listen.
Maybe you should.
Yeah.
There's a shoe salesman from Bristol who... swears he's related to Sachin Tendulkar, who was like a god of the game.
I know that name, yeah.
And he sells roller sole shoes. So like, you know, in clubs when women turn up with high heels, there's a vending machine where you can buy plimsolls.
Those things you roll
up. He invented them.
Wow.
Anyway, he doesn't know anything about cricket, but he's distantly related to Sachin Tendulkar.
Wow.
And he phones up every week to ask Jimmy... Or feed Jimmy with like ideas of how we could make cricket more interesting to more people. I spend a lot of time vindicating or discussing the peripherals of cricket and why one isn't interesting.
No, and I feel bad. Honestly, it's like a running joke with my husband because he is a genuinely massive cricket fan and like properly loves it. So I have, it's that thing of like, I've listened to Test Match Special, but in the background for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've absorbed quite a lot, but I almost like... He then can't believe how much I don't... Like, he'll be like, oh, this and that has happened. I'm like, and what does that mean? And he's like, you've listened to it for like 15
years. For 10 years, and you still don't understand.
But it's like, I just tune it. I like the tea break. Like when they have the chat.
Yeah.
I still haven't got over when that man liked started talking about Katy Perry.
Jeffrey Boycott.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, Jeffrey Boycott's a funny one because he's more... Most celebrities you'll meet are... less them than you imagine them to be. So you break it down and you're kind of speaking to the human quite quickly.
Yeah.
He's even more cartoonish, Jeffrey Boycott, than you imagine.
Yeah. I couldn't believe when... If you haven't listened to Test Match Special, basically there was this bit where someone sent a cake and he just started talking about Katy Perry and how beautiful
she was. He loves Katy Perry, yeah.
It was really sweet, but also weird, but also...
He loves it. He's a gruff Yorkshireman who isn't, you know, he's never been to a concert in his life.
Yeah.
He just suddenly took a liking to...
Yeah.
Katy Perry.
I remember hearing it live, and I tuned in, and I was like, and I said to Ben, I was like, is he talking about Katy Perry? And Ben was like, yep, yeah, he really likes her.
This is the good thing about a cricket test match special, there's so much time to fill, it gets quite psychedelic.
Yeah, it gets
really
psychedelic.
Because you do have to discuss other
That's the bit I like, when they go off into the stuff, and then I get a bit upset when they're like, oh,
It's come off the boundary. It's come off the boundary.
Yeah, I know. That's good. What's the podcast called?
It's come off the boundary. Tailenders.
Tailenders. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll get better. Obviously, Felix, we're not here. Let's talk about cricket, which is good because, as you can see, my knowledge involves coming off the boundary.
Yeah, coming off the boundary.
Who are we remembering today?
My mum.
Your mum. And what was your mum's name?
Lana.
Lana, that's a nice name.
It is a nice name, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah, Lana White was her
Lana
name.
Lana White, that sounds like a singer, doesn't it? It's got a, like...
Yeah, it does. It's a beautiful name,
yeah,
Lana.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Really beautiful. So, when did your mum die?
She died when I was 17.
When you were 17?
She had MS, but she had a very aggressive form of MS, which would be... loose with a phrase, but it would be called primary progressive MS now.
Okay.
But I don't know if it was diagnosed as that as such then.
Yeah.
But she got that when I was maybe 7.
Okay, so she was diagnosed when you were 7. Did they tell you, or were you aware?
That's a good question. Do you know what? I don't remember ever being told, but I would have been.
Yeah.
But I would have been too young, I think, to... No, it was just kind of quite obvious.
So it was obvious that she was ill.
Yeah, so she was quite... She's a very gregarious, social person, my mum. And she began to lose the sight in her left eye.
Wow.
Which is, I think, is quite typical. And then she lost the use of her left arm, so it would begin to swing like wildly, and she'd have to sort of hold it.
Oh my goodness.
Close.
Yeah.
Then she'd use a walking stick, and deteriorated to the point that her last few years of her life, she couldn't really move, and she'd be like, visibly pinning her head to her shoulder in order to kind of stop it from really like manically shaking. So yeah, it was a tricky
thing. So is
that
one of the symptoms of MS, is you're losing control of...
Well, what it is that I'm not the guy to give the exact time, but the nerves that send messages from your brain, so they get blocked.
Okay.
So you stop being able to do it.
Yeah.
And some people have it when they relapse, when they can live a lot of their life comparatively healthily. But my mum had really aggressive form where she just deteriorated at quite a huge rate, yeah.
So when did you start sort of being aware that, like, oh, okay, we don't have long left? Or was it not, was it more subtle than that?
No, it was really obvious, but it's funny because you have, because I know your dad had cancer, didn't he?
Cancer, yeah, yeah.
But it's funny because it was over such a long period now, but now I just have sort of quite blurred visions of the progress of it. So like I can run you through some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one is that we had someone looking after us, because me and my two brothers, and we were driving around and we came past the road, and this is when my mum wasn't that ill, but she just collapsed on the road.
Wow.
And we drove past her, and the nanny or whatever was like, shit, it's pulled up, and I think my mum realised that we were in the car, so she was trying to protect us, so she was trying to laugh it off, and she had to get carried into the car.
Wow.
And it turns out that her body had just gone, but some police had walked past her, and they had assumed that she was
drunk
or, you know, whatever it is. So they didn't pick her up to help her.
Oh, no.
Because they sort of ignored her, and then... Yeah, that's quite a sad memory now. But I remember it as her... laughing, and we kind of laughed with her, and I guess she was sort of trying
to make
protect
it like
us.
It's okay, don't worry,
you know, which is something that she did the entire time. But it's hard to now think of that, because it warps what my experience of it was a little bit, because as a kid we just sort of laughed, you're being silly.
Mum
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
those kind of things happen, and she died when I was 17, so it was a 10-year like incremental invasion of the body, really.
So towards the end, her mobility was massively affected. Was she kind of in a bed by the end?
Yeah, so she was in, at first we moved house, so we had we had a smaller house as you get around, then we had a stair lift, and eventually she was just in a bed by the door.
Right.
So there'd be carers coming in all the time.
And then were you with her when she died?
I wasn't. There's the story about when she died was she was getting more and more, like, obviously more and more ill, and it was clear that definitely no to my dad. I mean, we were kids. I'm the oldest of 17, so you know that it's not good.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't think you still don't kind of put it together, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was getting much, much more. I was becoming obsessed with music, and it was almost like it was a slight escape route. I was that kid, and I had I was obsessed with Oasis. I'd wake up thinking about Oasis. I'd slightly walk like Oasis. I learned all the interviews.
Wow.
I learned guitar for that reason.
Yeah.
And I still remember the date. It was February 5th, where Oasis were playing Watford Coliseum, which me and my friends bought tickets to, and we like queued up from 1 in the afternoon, ran to the front, had this, you know, transformative night where, you know, I got carried over the barriers and like waving at Liam, who nodded at me and thought, yeah, that is going to be my life, sort of thing. And I went back that evening. I knew my mum was ill, and I put my head around the door to say my dad was with my mum, and he wasn't usually that late. And she was obviously in a bit of distress, and I just said, it'll be amazing, I'll see you later. And I left. And then the next morning, I didn't say goodbye to her. And when I came back the next day, she died. Yeah.
So she died when you came back from the concert?
So the next day at school.
Next day at school.
But I always think of that moment, which is interesting because I used to beat myself up about that.
Yeah, of course.
But my dad actually had said to me since a few times that was an amazing moment, because it sort of, the fact that I'd enjoy myself, like, cut through all that pain she was feeling in that moment. So, anyway, I went to school, and then the next day she'd had trouble breathing, and I decided to stay at school to play football. And during that period of time, she started really breathing strange. My brother had seen her, phoned my dad, my grandparents turned up, and they were all there when she died. But I turned up maybe half an hour later.
Oh. But you're 17. Yeah. Like, you know, so this is... I didn't know you were a teenager when I started talking to you, because obviously I'm in the teenage club. And it's so... I don't know if I've said this story before. I remember I was eating this food. Like, we used to do a lot of dinner on trays, like on the telly.
Yeah.
Watching Fresh Prince.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And I remember, like, we'd had, like, chicken or something, and my dad said, take that out to the kitchen. So it's when he was very ill. And I was like, oh, I'll do it in a minute. He's like, take it out to the kitchen. And, you know, like, because you're still the teenager. So I was like, oh, I'll do it in a minute. Like, watching Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
And then he started moving, like, really weirdly, and, like, he went to do it. And I was like, what? And he said, it's making me feel sick.
Oh, wow, really?
He was on the chemo.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of, like, being a teenager when you're still a child. So you're a child, so you do childish things, but you have an adult brain that tells you how bad that is.
Mm.
And when you're, like, 8, you're like, okay, I mucked up. I didn't know. But when you're a teenager, you're like, oh, the thing I did that was really selfish and stupid, I'm fully aware that was awful. And I remember feeling so bad and, like, taking it to the kitchen and, like, you know, putting the, like, being like, why didn't you think? And it's just, I remember feeling so guilty about that for so long of, like, I didn't care. Because you think you read it as, like, I didn't care. When it's not. It's just being not really fully understanding a situation.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because... A part of it, you're robbed of those teenage years where you're allowed to be that flippant,
carefree, give a shit. Yeah, yeah,
you kind of, because you can always sense there's something bigger going on, isn't there? So that was with my brothers. We never really squabbled. Because it was always like that feeling that there's something
bigger than us,
bigger happening here.
Yeah, yeah.
So the house didn't have that normal thing of us sort of.
Yeah, especially 3 boys, I can imagine.
Do you know what I mean? When we got to that age, it wasn't just that, was sort of out of...
Yeah.
But I do remember thinking that. It's funny you say you're watching Fresh Prince, because we used to do it, get home, neighbours, home and away, whole family, the 2 cats, everyone is watching. That's what you do from, like, I remember 5:35.
Oh, God, yeah, your day was sorted.
For an hour.
Yeah.
So even my mum was in a wheelchair, we'd do that. And when she was getting really ill, I'd sometimes kind of watch TV and then go into the other room and report back to my mum and say whatever had happened.
And Carl and Susan.
Exactly. So I was watching Neighbours, and Madge died.
Oh, my God. Remember this?
Do you remember Madge died?
Yeah.
And I was, like, struck down with it. And at this time, my mum, she couldn't she couldn't really make any sounds.
Wow.
So she'd lost everything. And I was mortified that Madge had died. And I remember, you know, my mum had an affinity with Madge. So I ran next door and said, Mum, you remember Madge from Neighbours? She died. And my mum went, oh! And it was the loudest noise she had made. And then she realised that was funny. That was the thing that was
going to make her move.
And I realised that was funny. And we both kind of like laughed at each other. And then I got on with it.
That's like, so sweet.
She kind of made the gasp. And then she sort of went, how ridiculous of me that that's the thing that I'm going to make a noise
when
about.
When you watch Neighbours so much, like my mum still watches it. She'll still say something to me like, oh, Libby came back. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, Libby. How is she?
Yeah. Toadfish's girlfriend's pregnant. I'm like, what? It still gets you.
They are kind of embedded, aren't they?
It's like they are family. That is so sweet and anyway, so funny that that's what got her.
I still remember that, yeah. Because it's really loud gasp she made.
But she must have been shocked because...
Well, she must have been so shocked.
Madge wasn't supposed to die. You thought Howard would go. He was much older. And
exactly.
They did it quite... I remember that being a very sad episode, actually.
I can't remember how she died.
I can't remember either, but I remember it being really sad.
Howard walked into the sea, remember, to join the Salvation Army. No, he walked into the sea, they lost him, and then he came back a year later and he joined the Salvation Army.
Yeah. They tried to make out he'd been lost at sea.
Yeah.
I think that actor must have gone to do Panto or something, but we didn't, at the time I didn't connect that. But then he came back, didn't he?
Do you remember, sorry not to change subject, do you remember when they used to, I was thinking about this the other day, when they used to just change the actor who was playing.
Just overnight.
And you'd be like, fucking, that's not.
Yeah. Really annoying.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. That's not Susan. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, did they do that with Susan? Well, the original season's back now. They're still in it. Yeah, my mum still watches it. Shout out to my mum watching Neighbours. She still loves it. That's such a sweet story, though. That's so sweet. So then,
I remember thinking to myself, walking past her room when it was in the last year or two of her life, and thinking, I'm going to regret that I didn't go in then.
Yeah.
But I've heard you talk about in this podcast quite a lot, and it's something that I've since learned to forgive myself for a little bit, because you're doing a little bit of a survivalistic distancing.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's really weird. And I think it's quite hard to talk about.
Yeah. Because it's quite dark. Isn't
it? It is quite dark, but there's something about, it's hard, and it's hard to put into words, but it's something about knowing, and I feel this as well, I've said this, but they're dying, and there's a part of you that's like, don't get too close, they're dying. Like, there's part of you that knows that. And I also used to feel like, not that it was catching, but that you needed to remember that you weren't dying. That's what I had a lot of. Like, you know, you felt like you wanted to get outside sometimes and be like, I'm not the one dying, because your house feels so full of death and illness. And it's like cloaked. So I think sometimes, like, music and going to play football and things that make you feel, and for me, it was like comedy. It was like that laughter, it's like you force oxygen into yourself and you're like, oh, yeah. I'm alive, aren't I? Because it feels like everything's... Because, your family is essentially dying and will reform in another way.
Absolutely, yeah. It's quite a desperate situation, isn't it? And it hangs in the air.
Yeah, air is, like, thick. That's how I used to feel. Like,
you sort of open
the door, it's like, oh, God.
She was quite a bright presence, and she would have always... She was right towards the end. She was still kind of there.
And she
wouldn't express pain or anything. So it wasn't like it was an atmosphere that she was putting into the room.
No, you're right.
It just kind of is. But it's something that I've learned since that's just such a strange human thing that you're kind, especially when someone's ill for a long time, at the end you're going, well, if I'm not getting it from here, where am I getting that?
Yeah.
And obviously your love from your mum or your dad is something that you can't replace. But I had started to go, well, I have to find that somewhere else.
And
that began with, you know, a group of friends at school, or being in a band where people like clap you every night and tell you you're great.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, that kind of... That's like loosely the same thing.
Do you
know what I mean?
Yeah, well, this is why so many performers can come on this show.
Right.
Who have dead parents, because it's like, oh, we were missing something.
Totally.
So we went and found it somewhere else. Yeah, definitely. It's sort of... It's like, I do understand when people say, like, oh, alcohol filled a hole. I understand, because I go, yeah, that's how it felt for me with, like, comedy and that obsession. It was like, is doing something to ease that pain. Mm. And I always think, well, better than that, than drinking every day.
Were you talking about your dad's death to begin with immediately in your comedy when you were...
No, not at all. I did character stand-up for ages, so it was never me. It took me ages to be like, hi, I'm Carrie, and it was like, ugh. But I used to do things like, I had this character called the Magician's Daughter, and the whole set was... she'd been left on stage, her dad was a magician, and so she had to do the act, but the whole so she would get everything wrong, and I had all these magic tricks that went wrong.
She'd been thrown on the bus and like shit, I've got the bus, like a nightmare.
Yeah, and I'd sort of tell the story about how my dad was this awful like my parents had split up, and there was all this sort of like my mum had run off with a magician's assistant called Pablo, and it was all sort of stupid, but the whole time, the whole like the motif of this set was me going, dad, oh, he's coming. He's coming back. And it wasn't until years later, I was like, oh God, Carrie, that's so obvious what that was about. Like a girl being like, my dad set me down, but don't worry, he's coming back. But I will keep the show going till he's there. And you're like, it doesn't take Freud.
So hot. But you genuinely didn't believe it at the time. I realised what was happening.
I was like, that's funny. Yeah. That's fun. I would always just think that's funny. And I had another character called Andrew, who was a small boy, who, again, the dad had left and he had this awful stepdad. And he used to talk about the Russian Revolution and like do the history. That was stupid voice. But there was this... Again, the dad was in Dubai and he was waiting for his dad to come back, but his dad had been done for fraud. So many characters.
Wasn't coming back.
No. So, and I honestly, no review ever said anything. So I think there was enough other characters to like blur it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I never, is that what, so did you do start you, writing songs?
Can I ask you a question quickly?
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you have it recently though? Because I had, because obviously you know it rationally, but I almost quite recently, about probably being about 30, I had the sudden thing of like, oh, she isn't coming back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though she'd been dead for like 13 or 14
years.
It's
so bad, isn't it? Yeah.
And I suddenly went, oh.
Yeah. It's definitely happened, hasn't it?
She isn't here.
Yeah. I know, it's really weird.
Isn't that strange?
My therapist started making me say, he's dead. Because I used to always go, he died? She was like, it sounds very active. It sounds a bit like he's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's died, guys, but don't worry, he'll come back. And she started, well, not making me, but just making me aware that I never used to say my dad's dead, ever. It would be like, my dad died when I was 15, as if it's like a thing that happened over there.
Yeah.
Obviously, I invented it to protect myself.
Absolutely.
And when she started making me say it, I was like, I had the same thing. I was like, oh, I haven't accepted he's dead. Like, what the fuck? After 20 years, you would have, you know, if someone had asked you 2 years before you're 30, you'd be like, yeah, of course I have. But then you sort of realise those games you play with yourself. Mm-hmm. You sort of hide from the truth slightly.
Right.
So, yeah, I had...
And quite recent grief cast, because I listen to it a lot, and I'm always sort of trying to have a conversation with it.
Yeah.
But with Marcus Sullivan, which I love, that was brilliant.
Who also was at Teenage Club.
And him phoning up, his sister phoning up and saying, is it Mum's not alive anymore?
Yeah, Mum's not alive anymore. And he was like...
His brain shouldn't go right.
Yeah, because I think it's really hard. Like, I say it, I make myself say it now, but even saying it, like, my dad's dead, still, I'm getting better, but still feels like, whew, that's a big, heavy thing to say. Mm. Like, but I think it does come from being a teenager when it happens, or, you know, not a fully fledged adult, I suppose is fairer, that something your brain just has to lock it away because you're not ready to process it.
Yes.
And everyone I know in this club seems to find when you hit 30, around that time, you start going... Oh, maybe I need to
work out
what happened to me. Because it's like, it happens to you. Then you just spend your 20s being like, what the fuck? Totally. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Ignore it. Do everything possible. But it creeps up. And then you sort of hit 30 and think, oh.
It's really fascinating, isn't it? Because you do become an adult immediately.
Yeah,
an element of it.
Yeah.
But I've noticed in my behaviour recently, but there's elements of me that are still a 17-year-old. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I just, on the way here, I was thinking this. I've got a record label and we do these bi-monthly nights, which are amazing, so much fun. But basically, they're kind of nights where you take vitamins for a week and you make sure you've got 3 days off because it's going to be sort of chaos and really fun. And it was my birthday in September and they had a cake, so I got a cake. And there's this big, like, packed smoking area. And I just thought... It happened, the whole sequence happened in about 5 seconds. I just thought in my head, I'm going to turn around and throw this cake into that crowd. And I just turned my back and I just launched a fucking cake. I'm 34 on my 34th.
What a waste of cake is how I'm feeling.
I turned around and one of my friends was covered in cake. But then when I like thought about it, I was thought there were repressed acts of being a teenager that are like desperate to come out occasionally and without like my will.
Yeah,
that
comes out.
That kid who didn't get to throw cakes around when he was 7, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
suddenly
really
like,
do.
I'm going to fucking throw that.
Yeah, yeah. I really totally understand.
Yeah.
Well, we said this to Mark. Like, I feel it's taken me a long time to let go of that 15-year-old. Like, honestly, I was 15 for about, I'd say about, you know, 15 years. Like, I absolutely stayed there.
Right.
And I felt happy there. I understood that 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, and if I see teenagers now, I still doesn't take much to go back there. And having a kid for me really was quite difficult because it made me go, oh, fuck, I can't stay here anymore. But like I am, when I'm suffering from grief, when I'm feeling a bit shitty, I am such a sullen I go back to that teenager.
Yeah.
And I completely understand, like I didn't go off the rails. I didn't have that. So there's that that fucking urge to be like, oh, I'm going to fucking do this.
Yeah.
Like, because I didn't get to.
And were you angry about it?
I was so angry.
Oh, you were?
Oh, my God. I was like a ball of fire. Like, you would, you know, like, it's quite a funny sort of cliche character these days, but like a very angry girl teenager. Like, you know, you were like, do not, just stay away
like
from
peanuts,
her.
Peanuts, like Lucy from
Lucy, Darlene. Like, it was like, you were just, and I would think, I mean, I think I thought I seemed really tough, but probably I seemed like an intensely fragile, just don't.
Sure, you're wearing it more than you imagine.
I was
yeah.
so angry. Yeah, were you?
Well, no, because that's the interesting thing is that I wasn't angry about it at
God.
All.
Yeah.
Because I love my mum so much and she was such a, like, it was such a force of strength that she never sort of tried to project that thing that she was in pain or that I should worry about it at all. So I didn't feel like I could. If she's dealing with that so well, what is there for me to be angry about?
Yeah.
So I kind of still have that a little bit where I find it hard to access
your anger.
Being anger about, do you know what I mean? Being angry about
it. Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like, oh, if she could do that, then I can do this. But then it permeates into a difficult thing because everyone that I've had relationships with or been close with, if they're moaning about me and your thing, there's like a bit of my brain going, that's not really an issue.
Yeah.
So you stop them from, being allowed to just vent frustration because
you haven't vented
somewhere.
Your frustration. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, do you know what I mean? You have to kind of police your brain.
Yeah.
I totally know what you mean.
I think it's really interesting because I was so angry that the consequence of what's happened to me is like, I can go into the anger room too quickly. So I have to police myself. So mean your thing happens, I'm furious. I'm absolutely furious.
Really?
And even
now you can go,
I can go ballistic so
I wish I could do that. I would love
no,
that.
No, it's not good because my policing is like, I have to go, Cariad, I literally have to step out of a situation and go, what's happened? Do you actually need to react? Are you overreacting? Check everyone's faces. Do they look, they're looking at you like, why are you so angry? Okay, calm, because I was so angry. And I guess, obviously it's different, but like, because it was so quick. So to me, it was like, everything was fine, then it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just so angry that...
Sure.
And I felt so outraged. Like, what the fuck just happened?
Sure.
And so I find it really... Yeah, like, I mean, there's no good or bad. It's just the consequence. I wouldn't recommend this. I'm really this.
I'm envious of that.
No, I'm envious of your chill. I'm like, God, imagine that. Imagine if you could just be chill about everything.
But it is hard it has been hard on my side of that because you start to worry what am I going to get?
Yeah, yeah. When's it going to go?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe here now.
Maybe that's what the cake was. Fuck you guys.
Well, the cake probably was it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you think it was a bit of you that was angry? I always wonder, like, I'm always wary of going, oh, is this always about my dad? But then it always is.
Yeah, it kind of is though, isn't it? It
is
a definitive.
Yeah.
But it can't help be the definitive moment in your life.
It really can't. And that's what I fought so hard for so long to be like, this doesn't define me. This has nothing to do with me. My dad died, so what? Shit happens every day. Give a shit. Who cares? And then now I'm like, no, it's literally the reason that everything.
Of course.
Everything happened.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
When you started the band,
yeah.
You get this record deal. It happens like quite quickly, right? How was that? How old were you when that happened to you?
The band?
Yeah, so, when it started.
Pretty much immediately after my mum died. So wow. I'd started playing guitar, like I say, sort of teaching myself things like Oasis songs. And then I think the band were beginning to get together when my mum had died. And then the year after, actually formed and were just sort of rehearsing in bedrooms and garages. Yeah. And then we got a record deal a year after. And then that was my life from, 19 to 30 to last year.
That's a lot to deal with, because you're coming off the back of this long illness anyway, and then your mum dies, and then your life literally is unrecognisable.
Yeah, it was.
That must have been so strange.
I genuinely did love it. So
even if
my mum hadn't have died, I like to think that I would have been passionate enough to do it anyway. But it does instill a little bit of, well, I'm going to make this definitely work. I end up doing a lot of the diplomacy and the interviews and how do we get in here to here, and all that I'd be thinking about all the time.
Yeah.
How do we make this work? Which we did.
But that's amazing, because...
Yeah.
And there's no like good or bad. It's just like to be, have all that grief and then be in such a different world where, like you said, you are, the band and everybody's like, I'm trying to remember what cool people do. but I mean, like, it's like, that's cool and you're hanging out in places and that's a very different world. Like that, I just wonder how
it
you
was,
coped with that. Did you feel like you were grieving in that process?
No. It was a really healthy distraction. I mean, I spent the first few years actually telling people that I didn't care that my mum had died.
Yeah.
Me and my first girlfriend broke up when that was happening, because I was like, I don't need a mother. You know, she had maternalistic instincts.
Wow.
So I would constantly be shooting myself in the foot. And but, you create a family.
Yeah.
And that was the gang. And that harnessed like a lot of what I needed, because we're with each other every day. You're getting the gratification of people as it's going well. People going like, da, 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 you're great.
Yeah.
So there's this little bubble that can contain you quite effectively until it pops.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say, it sounds a bit like you were the mum of the group?
Do you think you might have to ask the others, but I definitely feel like I probably was. I definitely was very conscious of how everyone felt.
Yeah.
And was always trying to make sure everyone was happy.
Yeah.
But having said that, I was desperate for this band to be a big band. So actually, I was facilitating it.
A pushy mum.
Because it was my dream as well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was kind of, when I look back on it now, I feel a bit, I feel apologetic towards certain members of the band that I was so...
So driven.
Yeah, come on, we're doing this. But I think it's not like everyone wanted to do it. We loved it.
But I think it's because Dawn O'Porter said that in her episode, that she's very her mum died when she was very, very little, six. And she was saying she's very mothering, but if anyone tries to mother her, it's like because she's not used to it. And
I think that's true. I think sort of emotionally, definitely, I was sort of very maternalistic, yeah, paternalistic. But it kind of came up, the things that would happen most is that when we achieved certain things in the Maccabees, I would suddenly get very sad.
Yeah.
So be working towards something like the last record went to number one, and it was, you know, I was suddenly obsessed with getting this record to number one for a couple of weeks. And it happened. And when I got the call to say it was, I was suddenly like overwhelmed with actually being really sad.
It's so shit, isn't it? I have that all the time.
Do you, yeah, when things go well?
Oh my God, when things go well. One, it's terrifying and it's sad. That's all I find. It's just, and like you said, it's that thing of like, you can be so aware of yourself, or you think you are, and your work, you think, no, it's not about my dad, it's about this. I just want to get this. I just want to get this review or this thing or this gig or this acting job. It's not about that. And then you get it and you're like, oh, I was looking for approval.
Exactly. Like, and isn't it sad that, because the person you want to tell, you can't.
You never, ever.
And that was in that Bross documentary.
I know.
Well, so many people were sending it up, like rightly so, because it is hilarious. But I actually thought it really moved me towards the end, because they talk about their mum dying, and he says quite elegantly, I think it's Matt, eloquently, that the problem with your mum dying is that the one call you need to make, you can't make anymore. So you become I remember that feeling, you know, wanting to do it for my dad, but also every time you get to the top of the mountain, and then you're like, fucking hell, I'm so sad.
Yeah. And like you said, it just sort of hits you, doesn't it? It's like waves overwhelming of like, of sadness. I do find it hard to be happy. I find it hard. And that doesn't mean like I'm not happy. I am a lot. But I find it when things are going well, I find that very unnerving. Very unnerving.
Me too.
Yeah, I really don't like it.
Isn't that
like,
interesting?
Yeah. And my therapist is always saying to me, you know, it's because I just think things are going to be taken from me.
Right.
Like, so I just can't relax. I'm just like, well, this is great, but what's going to happen? Like, and that's where the anxiety comes from. Because you're like, that's what, you know, you're... formative years, something was taken from you.
That's exactly, and I think that's really buried deep beneath the surface. That's how I feel as well, but it's so beyond my conscious understanding, because you just trick yourself, don't you?
Oh, God,
But that is exactly what that is. After the band, the band happened, but after my mum died, but I got really into going to Fulham Football Club and watching England play cricket. And I mean, I genuinely do love those things for everything that's in them, the community, the theatricality, the sense of belonging, the drums, all that stuff. But Fulham lost a lot. And the England cricket team lost a lot.
Yeah.
And I do wonder sometimes whether that it fed into my story about myself, because I could go to school when my mum died and be, you know, like, oh, my mum's died. And you get quite a lot of attention for it.
Yeah.
I remember that month when she died being almost buzzing.
Oh yeah, people are really fussing. Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
So exactly. So then after it was almost like I almost would go to Fulham every week, kind of hoping that they'd lose, because then I'd get the little kick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I guess also it's a place where you could be sad. Like if you were saying, like, I'm fine, I'm fine. And then you could go and be like, oh, I'm sad Fulham lost.
Oh my God,
sad about the cricket rather than...
I didn't think about that's what it is. Like, oh, you know,
because that's
my favourite
about.
Conversation. Like, what are we going to do with Fulham Football Club then? Like, much more than when we win.
Yeah, because if you were with a team that were winning, that's not what you needed.
It felt vulgar to me. Yeah. Like, ugh. All the winning, why would you want that?
Why do you want to deal with all that happiness?
I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, and so it's like a sort of safe space, isn't it? Like you can be sad and that's okay.
Oh, that's really interesting.
But like you said, it's so beyond your consciousness sometimes. Like it's just these, you know, these things that you do. And I think especially when it happens to you as a teenager, because as a teenager, you don't really know where you're doing things anyway. You know what I mean? It's not like an adult where you'd be like, oh, I think I'm doing that thing I always do. You're like, I don't know. I'm just swinging from like
pillar
to post, doing whatever happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So the band obviously did amazingly. when they broke up,
mm-hmm.
was that hard?
Yeah.
As in, not just because your band broke up, but because it's a loss, right? Like,
yeah, that's a very perceptible view.
Sorry. I was just thinking, if I was with like 15 years, but I would be, I'd find that very difficult.
No, you know what? It was a huge and definitive moment of my life again when my band broke up, because simultaneously, kind of accidentally, but maybe it was, you know, I had a relationship that ended exactly the same time.
Wow.
And we did these final gigs, and I felt like the world was ending, actually.
Mm.
And the band was splitting up against my will. The relationship was pretty much the same thing, and I felt like I might just disappear now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, but we kind of harnessed this thing with the group that we were going to go out on a high on our own terms. So we did these last shows, and what they became, or what we attempted to make them, was a sort of exorcism of all the bad goodbyes.
Oh, that's nice.
So we were saying goodbye together.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that's what life's like.
Mm.
But we were putting it in a space where everyone could do it together. So we had this run of shows where you could feel, you know, people were coming up to me regularly saying, oh, my dad died, or this happened, and we listen to your records all the time, da, 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 and you feel that everyone was putting the energy of that into, like, even when I talk about it now, like, it's almost too much to sort of discuss, but I feel like we did a really beautiful thing there. Part of my brain was thinking, this is a nice way to harness this, you know?
Yeah.
But the other side, I spent 3 months when I just felt like I didn't know what I was going to do or who I was supposed to be. And basically, Karen, I decided to say yes to everything.
That is the thing to
and
do.
And it's kind of worked, actually,
yeah.
because I feel so much better and I don't really miss the band apart from playing shows and, you know.
But that's really, I find that's really interesting just because, I mean, it's so tiny, but I'll compare it because it's funny. I had this improv group when I first started called The Institute, and it was like, in no way as successful as the Maccabees. Play the Canal Cafe Theatre pretty regularly, and people said we were really good.
I bet you were.
Yeah, we were good. We were good. And yeah, like Sarah Pascoe was in there, and Gemma Whelan, who's now in Game of Thrones, and Lucy Chard from Showstop, like all these brilliant comedians. But it was like, I really drove that a lot. I really drove it, and I drove it a lot, and then I drove it so much that I drove people away. And I remember, like, my very good friends being like, yeah, we might not do this. We don't know if we want to do this anymore. And me being like, what? Like, that's what we're doing. We're doing the thing. And I found it, like, devastating.
That's exactly it.
I found it devastating that they, because for me, and it's taken me a long time to realise this, like, I take a lot of things as you're leaving me. When it's not, it's someone going, oh, this isn't right for me anymore. But I hear, you're leaving me.
1,000,000%.
And it's taken me a long time to go, because you see their reaction is like, wow, I mean, it's just an improv. We meet, I mean, for you, it's a bit different. It was a very successful band, but for me, they were like, we meet on a Sunday. I mean, it's nice. About 20 people see us once a month. It's not. And I'm like, okay. Like, and I gave up improv afterwards. I was like, that's it. Heart's broken, like, I'll never do it again. And then I very slowly, and it's funny you say about saying yes, because that's the sort of foundation of improv, is saying yes to things and being really open.
Mm.
And yeah, then it's funny, like, eventually things started, more people were like, oh, do you want to come back and do this thing? And I was like, yeah, okay. But it was like, I knew something was a bit off. I thought this reaction is a bit off, but I just couldn't put it into words. It took me a long time to realise, like, oh, I find things ending very, very difficult.
And kind of when it's happening now, because it happens throughout everyone's life.
Yeah, of course,
life. Can you observe it from outside yourself and go, oh, this is why I'm finding it that difficult? Or
yeah.
Does it still take a while to, like...
I've got better. Yeah. I've definitely got better. And I've got better at just sort of having a little word with myself, being like, they're not dying. I sometimes have to say, they're not dying. They're just leaving the room, or they're just asking, they're just going away for a bit. Like, but yeah, I have got... But I still have... The initial gut reaction is like, don't leave.
Totally.
And then I have to go... Like, almost talk to my 15-year-old self and be like, that's not what's happening here. Like, you're all right. They're not dying in front of you. But it's like, you know, again, you're out of control. Something happened when you didn't really understand it. Mm. Someone just died when you didn't know what that meant. Mm. So then anything... So that's why I really, when you said you were with them for 15 years and then you broke up, I was like, oh, I'd find love. Yeah, I felt for you.
Really,
I was like,
extremely
yeah,
hard.
Yeah, really hard. Because it's... My therapist has taught me. She's like, all losses matter. You know, everything... It doesn't mean like they have to devastate you or define you.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who is... I like to think of it like I've had an allergic reaction. So like, you know, so like anything that might be, you know, near some nuts. It's like, it's not, you know, the band dying isn't your mum. The band dying, sorry. I even said that. The band breaking yeah. up isn't your mum dying.
So funny you said that because I was yeah. just thinking that, I know that was a slip, but when the band were breaking up, I was trying to sort of fix it and it was obvious I couldn't. And I spoke to my dad about it and then he phoned up a week later and goes, so it's Terminal, is it, the band? And
you're like,
it was just because he's the same.
Yeah.
Because he's lost.
Yeah, of course.
You know, the mother of his children, his wife, yeah. someone he loved so much. So it was like he needed to go, right, that's it.
That's Terminal. Yeah, that's how we understand this.
And I remember my term, like thinking the term, that is so harsh, the terminology of that. But it's because he needed to know.
Yeah. What is it we're dealing with?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's Terminal. Okay, I can then I know how to help you.
And the band was dying, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was something that was... yeah, anyway, I think I loaded all of that repressed grief from all that time
yeah.
and put it in that moment, basically, yeah. which was probably really good for me.
Yeah, and those concerts, I think it's interesting as well that you... Your goodbye with your mum, like you said, was quite hard. So you yeah. made sure this goodbye wasn't that.
Yeah, there was an element of that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think that's beautiful.
It was really beautiful. It was a really special thing. And then again, it's that hard thing that like, oh, she didn't see that.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm laughing because I know how you feel. I'm just like,
do you know what I mean? You're like, oh,
fucking hell. Everything, everything.
Yeah.
But anyway. I think you just, I found it, this is the thing about grief. It's like, it's not that it gets easier. I think it's like you get better at looking after yourself.
Mm.
That's what I think sometimes. Yeah. So you're like, oh, I've been here before. I know what this is.
Right.
You're going to be all right.
Yeah.
Whereas when it first happens, you're like, what the this feeling is so hideous.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with it. But as you get into your 30s, you're like, we done this.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's not here. I know how this feels. It's going to be shit. But I will be okay. Somehow I'll find the end, my way through
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's odd even talking to you about it now because I was thinking about this the other day and it was something that occurred to me whilst listening to Griefcast, even though I have been in therapy for a few years, is that I haven't ever had a conversation with someone who's been through it as well.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. Oh, not wow. over, not beyond one or two sentences.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Someone saying,
yeah.
I remember this, and I go, oh, yeah, it's a bit like that, and that's the end.
Right, okay. Yeah. So how is it feeling talking about
it? No, it feels good. I feel like I'm just inside the podcast listening. I'm always talking good. At it anyway.
Yeah. I felt like
But I think that would be a lot of people's experience.
Yeah.
And now it feels really weird to me that you would have gone that much time without ever even mentioning it
yeah.
with someone.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, no, I totally understand because I used to talk about it, but only if people... Like, I'd only talk about it if someone was like... Oh, my dad died, and I'd be like, "Oh, right, me too." Like, we can talk, but I didn't really meet anyone in the teenage club until I started doing the podcast, and then Jack Rook's episode, and his dad died of cancer when he was 15, and it was like, I found it so weird because he'd say stuff, and I'd be like, "Yes, yes, that's how I felt," and I think sometimes it's under like that power of, I mean, we talk about it being in the club, but I think. And I've always said, like, there's rooms in the club because sometimes when someone comes to me with, like, a pancreatic cancer story, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. It's so horrible. It's so horrible.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, or they come with, like, a dad or a mum. You know, there's these little other subsections of the room, the club. And it's just, it's really important. I find it really healing, without sounding awful, to find someone who understands your, like, what you went through kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's easy not to talk about.
It's easy.
It's really easy. And people are so afraid of upsetting. So if... I think, especially if I didn't know you and, you know, we weren't in this room doing this podcast and it came up and you just said a couple of sentences and changed the subject, I'd be like, oh, okay. Like,
it's off it's limits. Off.
Yeah. You don't want to push someone.
Isn't that interesting though? Because that's what exactly what would happen. But then my brain would be like, they've shut that conversation down. But actually, what I think I'm probably asking for is someone to understand how I'm feeling without me telling them. And that's what mum does.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so you're kind of like...
Just to know, just to get
you want someone just to know.
Yeah.
And no one really is going to know.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? That's what the sad feeling is, because that's mum's...
Yeah.
And my dad is great like that, but they're the only people that can sort of...
Yeah.
Do that for you.
Oh,
do you see what
I'm saying? Really do. I really do. I hadn't thought of it like that. But you're completely right. Oh, God. I'm sorry, everyone I've spoken to ever.
totally.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to make you my dad. I'm sorry.
No, but you know what I mean? You kind of put put that disappointment on them a little bit.
Yeah, very much. And I've tried to get better at that, but I definitely did that in my 20s. If people didn't say the right thing, I would feel like you. I'd go, oh, they shut that down. They're a prick. Everybody's a prick. That's what life is.
Yes.
And that's just like that's another...
That's my life.
Yeah, that's my fucking life. No one understands me.
Yeah, full of shit.
Yeah. And that's where my anger came from. It's like, no one fucking understands me. And then you just build up another wall, and so it's harder for people to get anywhere near you. And you're like, God, no one ever tries to get near me. And you're like chain smoking and shouting and swearing. It's like, no, they don't, because you're terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... You're so right, though, because... That understanding, that ability to just look at, and which is family, is like you said, is family, not necessarily just parents, to be fair, because some parents aren't great at it, but that ability to just look at someone and just know what's up.
Mm.
So I think, it's interesting, like you said, that band was you made a family that I guess could look at you and go, oh, I know what he wants and is thinking. For
this. We knew our role and we depended on each other.
Yeah, of course, of course. But the talking about it is...
Yeah, I don't know why I thought of this, but when my mum did die, the Queen Mother had just died, and so the whole of the country had the flags like lowered at half mast.
Yeah.
And Ben Holyoake, who was a cricketer, he died in a car crash.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Do you remember that? And he was sort of 24 or something. Yeah. Really tragic event, and it all happened in that same week. So I remember feeling like, oh, this is a little umbrella of grief, which is all to do with the same thing. I know that isn't context.
But it just sort of
popped into my head.
Yeah, of life. I didn't realise for ages that Princess Diana died the year before my dad. And I always thought it was the year before. And then recently I worked out, it's like she died in the August. And then my dad was dead in the April. So I was like, actually, it was like really not that long after my dad. And so there was constant television programmes about, do we discuss death too much? Like mortality? How is this country grieving? And I remember feeling very like, I wish they'd all stop fucking talking about
it. Did you?
Fucking. I found it a bit, well, I suppose what I found was like, they were talking about Diana and I was like, I'm upset by my dad. Like,
and that was stealing your dad's sort of.
It just felt like I couldn't.
Yeah. I know exactly.
But that's
why
I've always wanted to speak to Prince William, because we were like the same. We're born in the same year, like, and then his lost his mum. And I've always felt really like that weird thing of like, when people say those poor boys, I thought I kind of bet I know how they feel a tiny bit. Obviously, it's very different. They're raised in a royal family.
No, I know.
You know what I mean?
I would be really. That struck me the other day, because I would say I'm definitely anti-royalist, but so I have my opinions about them. But it did strike me the other day, oh my God, they were boys that lost their mum, and the whole, everyone knew about it, and and on a human level, how awful that actually must have been.
Oh God, did you go to her funeral?
Yes, I did, yeah. But I do remember feeling totally numbed out about it, apart from, the cemetery was over the road from the church, and so we carried, and it was a similar thing, she was young, so there was loads of people there, a lot of people really cared, and... My dad asked me to carry the coffin, actually, and then and then I wasn't given a responsibility. I think he asked me, and then he maybe thought better of it, which is probably fair. But when the day of the funeral, her casket came into the house to say goodbye to her, so it was sort of wheeled in, and it was open, and she was there.
Wow!
I remember being suddenly aware of my influence as the older brother, because I didn't know what to do. She was just there to say goodbye. I don't know why I did. I sort of kissed my fingers, my hand, and then put it on her forehead, I think. And then both my brothers did the same thing. And I didn't know, because it felt weird to kiss the dead. Yeah. I didn't really know what you were supposed to do.
Yeah, but of course they go, oh, just do what he's doing.
Like, I think maybe they did a little bit.
Well, you do. I have an older brother, and it was very much like, well, I'll just do what
that's
he's
what
doing.
I didn't fucking know what I was supposed to, you know.
That's the realisation as a younger sibling. You're like, I thought you knew what you were doing.
I didn't know that was like, what the thing. They did it as if, oh, yeah, that's the sort of protocol here.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, when the ceremony happened, and then it was just over, it's just over the road, the grave, so we went over there, and everyone followed the coffin. And it got lowered into the ground. And I remember I was the first one there with my family. Everyone kind of gathered around it as it was lowered in. And I remember just thinking, I want to spit in that.
Into the grave?
Yeah. And I don't know what, it was not, like, there was no sort of dis, you know, like I said, I love my mom so, and I wasn't, but I just remember having to really withhold everyone surrounding me being like, and I don't spit.
No.
You know, as a thing. But I remember thinking, I'm just going to,
but don't you think it's something like you're trying to like break it? You're trying to like because it's so weird. It's like if I do something like that, then it just fucking you want to shatter
maybe
something.
Yeah.
And I think also when you're just a teenager, it's just I don't know if you felt like it's just everything's so. I just felt so weird. I felt like I didn't have the language for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really interesting that you say spitting, because it's like
isn't that weird? It's like
it's something like if you can't say what's happening to you, but you can.
Yeah, but
or shout
maybe
or
that
scream.
Would have been an act that would have kind of.
It would have said, I'm not okay.
Yeah, it would have said, I'm not okay.
And then maybe everyone would have gone, oh my God, okay, he need. But probably standing there looking composed and made everyone go,
I thought
he's
better
okay.
Of it.
He's okay. Now, are you feeling like, obviously, it's not like you're better, but you feel like saying yes to stuff and it sounds like you're processing a lot of what's happened.
Yeah, I think it was really good. Yeah, last couple. I mean, in terms of grief, I think it is. It's funny because when you asked me to do this, I thought, oh, I've got so much to say about this. And then yesterday, I just had this momentary freak out of, oh, I don't know if I've grieved at all.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I might get really upset and not know not be in control of.
Yeah.
So it's that thing with grief that you're like the rubber band, isn't it? Like you're getting further and further away from it, and then one day it'll snap and you'll be like right next
right
to it
back,
again. So yeah, I do. And I dream about mum quite a lot.
It varies. Like I have phases.
Yeah,
I had years when I didn't at all, at nothing. And I said this before as well, like when after he died, both my mum and my brother had like really beautiful dreams about him, like he visited them and I didn't. I was so pissed off.
Sorry, it's not funny.
Oh, no, but it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe it. They kept going, I had a dream about Dad and he was surrounded in light. And I was like, where's my
fucking
dream?
You're like checking
dream?
Your dream inbox. Yeah. Nope, nothing coming in.
I had one dream and the dream was, have I said this before, that we were trying to go to school and we had like a porch outside our door and his dead body was there. And everyone kept going, oh God, we can't get through the front door. And I remember looking at him thinking, whoa, we're going to have this dead bodies, right? Oh, okay, well, we've got to go to school. And like that was my dream.
Mm.
And then my mum and my brother had these, like, he came and he said he loved us and he was in light, and I was so pissed off. I was like, unbelievable. Where's my moment?
It's your way of dealing with it, wasn't
but
there, it?
That's what, yeah, I went to see, like, I had one session with this, like, child therapist and it was awful. But I remember telling her that. And that's the one thing she said. She was like, well, it sounds like you deal with things very practically.
Yeah.
And I thought,
because that's the reality, you know.
Yeah, that's, I guess I couldn't really do a surrounded in light thing, because I think I would have had to have accepted that he had died. And I think I wasn't really in that headspace.
I had exactly, like, in that moment we were talking about when my band broke up and I was processing, and then I did have a couple of months where I was really upset about it, and I had a couple of dreams where I was in the room with my mum, and I was coming out and saying, you know, come on. And she's like, no, I can't come.
Oh, my God.
That makes me really sad now thinking about that. But she said, no, you can tell me about what's happened, but I can't come.
I think those things are really beautiful, though, if you get things like that. I find that really...
It was her or me telling me what I needed to know, really.
Yeah. And it doesn't stop it being sad. It is sad. But to at least feel like there's...
Yeah, it was, yeah.
That's...
Because a little bit, you think it was actually her. There's a bit, you know what I mean? It kind of felt like
still,
it was
her. You know her so well that voice can live on. And if she can say that to you in your subconscious,
then
that's her love living on.
It's good enough, yeah.
It's just, but yeah, it doesn't stop it being fucking sad. When you, what do you do when you wake up from them? Do you ever have that like, ugh, like, you just try and get on with it?
No, I think I kind of, I think I enjoy her presence. Mm. You know, whenever she gets brought into any kind of conversation, or I think I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I think that's quite massive, actually.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's nice to, I think, you know, again, don't need Dr. Freud to tell you, like, that's why I do the show. Because it's like, it's a bit like,
yeah,
I get to make him around a bit
totally more. It's such a nice thing.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. Well,
she sounds like a really brilliant lady.
She was amazing, yeah. She was.
She sounds like she was a really good mother.
She was an incredible mother, yeah.
Yeah.
And because my dad will definitely listen to this, he's an amazing dad as well, and he was a great partner. So, yeah, I'm a very lucky person, really.
Yeah, and they do say for children who have lost a parent, like, a large factor is a surviving parent of how they cope.
Right.
So you're sitting here being a brilliant person, so obviously...
Yeah, you smashed it, definitely.
You smashed it. Yeah. You came off the boundary with a six. Is that right? Is that a good thing?
It'll do for
it'll
now.
It'll do for now, okay.
Can I also just quickly say,
yes.
You had Julia Samuels on this.
Yes.
And I had just read Griefworks when she... before I listened to it, and that's an amazing book.
Yes, so amazing.
That really helped me out a lot. All the sort of character studies with the people. So, I mean,
yes, we haven't talked about that for a while, actually. Yeah, Griefwork by Julia Samuel. It's case studies, but it's kind of incredible.
Yeah. There was one boy who had lost his mum, and there was, I can't remember the full details of it, but reading it was a genuine light bulb moment to me.
Well, Felix, thank you so much for coming to talk to me about Lana.
Pleasure. Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
You can follow Felix on Twitter at Felix White, where you can get details of his new record company, Yala Records, and all the gigs that he's organising. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. If you have enjoyed the show, please do rate and review and subscribe. It helps other people find the show and is hugely appreciated. The show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios, and the music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.